Good evening. One of the most fascinating adventures into our past consists of tracing the origins of our transportation system. To begin with, there were water routes, lakes and rivers, and crude trails, following in many cases the lines of travel used by the American natives. In the 1820s and 1830s, there was a great era of canal building, thus connecting and expanding routes of water travel. And at about the same time, the steamship was beginning to supersede the older canoes and sailing vessels. Land routes were likewise expanded and improved during the same period, the most notable achievement being the construction of a hard-surfaced road westward through Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois to St. Louis. Then in the 1830s began the great era of railroad building. In a great many cases, the railroads simply followed the main highways, which in turn had followed the Indian trails. Here in Michigan, we had an interesting development of brief duration in the later 1840s, when numerous plank roads were built as feeders for the railroads. With railroad extension, these became outmoded. We have told the story of how the interurbans came along just about the close of the 19th century to supplement and facilitate travel by rail. Just before World War I, the automobile appeared on our highways, bringing with it a demand for good roads. And so during and after World War I, our state and nation were crisscrossed with broad avenues of concrete. This era of good roads came almost exactly a century after the road building enthusiasm which sprang up when settlers first entered the West and Michigan. On these good roads, constructed for automobiles, presently ran trucks and buses in ever-increasing numbers. They were traveling main trunk lines like US 12 and US 112, which were built on the foundations of the old highways laid out over 100 years ago. Finally came the airplane. The air lanes are not affected by water barriers or land contours, and so they have tended to follow independent routes and depart from the lines laid down by the pioneers and later followed by the railroads. It is our purpose on the next few broadcasts of Stories of Kalamazoo to relate to you the interesting record of travel in the early days, to tell you how the roads, the canals, and the railroads were built, what they were like, and why they were built, where they were. We shall have to begin quite a ways from Kalamazoo if we are to get the whole story straight. In fact, we shall have to start more than a half a century before Kalamazoo was founded. Just before and during the American Revolution, the people along the Atlantic seaboard were casting their eyes toward the West. Some of them were mainly interested in the trade in furs, but a great many had the itch to secure new lands for themselves, lands which hadn't been worn out by too much use and too little fertilizer. They had been held back at first by the presence of the French in the West and the habit of the French of discouraging settlers from the English colonies. But in 1763, the French had to surrender this vast Western country to the English. The English government in London sought to regulate and control and even to prohibit the movement of people from their Atlantic seaboard colonies to the West. It would destroy the fur business, they thought. It would arouse the Indians, whose help was needed to catch fur-bearing animals. Indeed, this effort of the British government to keep the colonists from moving west was an important cause for the War of Independence. In spite of British laws and proclamations, settlers did find their way into the West even before 1776. It was not an easy job to get across that mountain barrier. The Alleghenies are not particularly high as compared to the Rockies, but they contain very few passes or breaks between New York and Georgia. You all have heard the story of Daniel Boone and how he opened up the Wilderness Road through the Cumberland Gap from Virginia into Kentucky. Now, just to keep our geography straight, let me remind you that the Cumberland Gap lies close to the point where the present boundaries of Kentucky, Virginia, and Tennessee meet. It should not be confused with Cumberland, Maryland, which is considerably further north. Other roads across the mountain barrier were built during the French and Indian War. One of these starts at Baltimore, Maryland, and crosses the mountains to the present city of Pittsburgh. It was the road hewed out of the wilderness by General Braddock on his ill-fated expedition designed to capture Fort Duquesne from the French. Later, it became the first link in the old National Road, now Highway US 30. Another road called Forbes Road was built in 1759 when General Forbes cut his way across Pennsylvania from Philadelphia, took Fort Duquesne away from the French, and renamed it in honor of the great English statesman, William Pitt. These were the roads chiefly used by settlers moving into the West during the years following the American Revolution. At Pittsburgh, the settlers took to flatboats and keelboats on the Ohio River. This stream took them along the southern borders of what are now the states of Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. It took them also to St. Louis and Missouri, which were on American soil after the Louisiana Purchase of 1803. From the Ohio River, the settlers moved up the various rivers flowing into the Ohio. They followed the Kanawha, the Kentucky, the Cumberland, and the Tennessee rivers into the states of Kentucky or Tennessee. And if they liked the northern lands better, they moved up the Scioto, the Muskingum, or the Miami into Ohio, up the Wabash and its tributaries into Indiana, or up the Mississippi and then the Kaskaskia or the Illinois River into Illinois. Until the close of the War of 1812, there was a definite Indian menace in this northern country. After 1815, settlers moved westward in ever-increasing numbers. They pushed further and further up the rivers into Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio. It was only a short portage from the Kankakee River in Illinois to the St. Joseph River, and only a short ways from the Upper Wabash or the Upper Miami to the Maumee River. Some of the earliest Michigan pioneers entered what is now Michigan by these routes. Basil Harrison, for instance, Kalamazoo County's first settler, came into Michigan and Kalamazoo overland from Indiana. Many others did the same. There was a very considerable influx from the south into St. Joseph, Cass, and Berrien counties. The records show quite a few Virginians, New Jerseyites, and even Kentuckians among our early Michigan pioneers. The chances are that most of them came this way. But the great influx into Michigan and into Kalamazoo County in the early 1830s came by an entirely different route. Most of these people were from New England and western New York. You see, after the American Revolution, the Iroquois Indian lands in western New York were acquired. Massachusetts had charter rights to this land, and most of it was sold by Massachusetts to settlers who wanted to move west after the Revolution. To the New Englander of 1790 and 1800, the West meant western New York. There was much good land there, but not enough to satisfy the next generation when it came along. Due to erroneous reports after the War of 1812, the impression got abroad that Michigan lands weren't much good. It took 10 or 15 years to dispel that notion. Then in 1825, the state of New York finished Clinton's Ditch, the Erie Canal, which traversed central and western New York, connecting Albany on the Hudson and Buffalo on Lake Erie. Well, here was an ideal and inviting route of travel to the West. Here was assurance that crops grown in the West could be transported back to the East and find a market. The typical pioneer family packed its belongings, got aboard a canal boat, and after a few days of leisurely progress, found themselves in Buffalo. Lake boats carried them from Buffalo to Detroit. Now, Detroit had been founded in the year 1701 by the French. Under French, English, and now American control, it was the principal military and governmental post in this region. Otherwise, there would have been no particular reason why the point of entrance into Michigan should not have been Toledo or Monroe. Indeed, both these towns had high hopes in the early days. But the fact that Detroit was a governmental center, long established and conveniently located, gave that city the primacy as a point of entrance for Michigan settlers. At this point, it is important to note an interesting and important feature of Michigan geography. The land divide, that is the highlands separating the rivers flowing eastward and those taking a westerly course in lower Michigan, is well to the eastern part of the state. As a result of this fact, the rivers flowing eastward into Lake Huron and Lake St. Clair and Lake Erie are relatively short. The settlers couldn't get very far inland by following those rivers. Their other alternative, or one other alternative, was to take a ship around the lower peninsula and enter the state on its western side. Now, from Michigan on the western side, it would be possible to follow rivers like the Manistee, the Muskegon, the Grand, the Kalamazoo, and the St. Joseph quite a ways inland. However, these pioneers were an impatient lot. They didn't relish the idea of a long lake voyage. And besides, the land offices were located at Detroit and White Pigeon, later at Kalamazoo. And the settlers probably had a hankering to take a look at this territory or the state which they were going to make their home. Hence, it was customary for the settlers to make their way overland from Detroit on foot, on horseback, by stagecoach, by wagon, and later by railroad to reach the land which they had purchased or preempted. One of the roads leading westward from Detroit passed through Kalamazoo County and the town of Kalamazoo. That was the Territorial Road. Most of the early settlers used that road to reach their new homes here in Kalamazoo County. Next week, we're going to tell you something about this old Territorial Road and the other principal roads leading into western Michigan. We're also going to trace the development of other means of transportation by these early pioneers. And now, this is Willis Dunbar bidding you a most pleasant good night.